Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. And Jim, we've talked a lot about fiscal issues lately, the efforts to get rid of the president's health care plan, which many people believe very harmful to the economy. But today, we're getting even deeper into the weeds, thanks to the House Budget Committee and Chairman Paul Ryan. They've got the Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke before them, talking a lot about quantitative easing parts one and two, what the Fed's doing, what they're not doing. And what is good is that we have a competent chairman now, and one who's going to demand answers and lead this committee, as he said many times, and just starting this process with this hearing today, down a road towards fiscal responsibility. And hopefully that's true. And hopefully we're going to get more accountability from the Fed and Geithner and everybody else.
Indeed, Greg. There are a couple points in which I kind of had a slight anxiety of Americans were going to be fooled into thinking the economy is doing better than it really is. You started seeing Obama's approval rating starting to inch up in a couple of polls. And with the most recent job numbers that came out at the end of the month, you saw the unemployment rate dropping to 9%. While the economy was only creating 35,000 jobs, well below the commonly accepted threshold of what we're going to need just to keep up with population growth, new workers entering the economy, et cetera, et cetera. Most people attributed this to the discouraged worker category, people who stopped looking because basically despair has set in. The conditions of the Obama economy have just beaten them into submission, where they've learned to, like an abused spouse, not to ask questions anymore, like, are you hiring? Add on to that, you know, this sense that maybe Americans were just kind of growing used to it, that this was 9% unemployment was the new normal and people were going to be okay with it. I took a little bit of solace today from the new numbers from Gallup showing that Obama's overall approval rating on the economy is pretty lousy. 9% of Republicans approving, which isn't that surprising. I think, in fact, some people might wonder why it's so high. But only 32% of independents are approving of how Obama's doing the economy, which is, you know, probably about where it should be or even a little high on there. I was kind of struck that after 21 straight months of 9% unemployment or higher, you see Democrat approval of Obama handling the economy at 68%. Greg, I don't know about you. I look at that and think, well, there's just no circumstance in which they'd say they disapprove. I mean, you could see mass starvation and cannibalism breaking out in the heartland. And most Democrats would say, he's doing a good job. I like what he's doing. You know, people are eating healthy. And Michelle Obama would say people are only eating the low fat neighbors. And that's, you know.
Yeah, that's definitely numbers that we should come to expect. But I think the key numbers, like you mentioned, are the ones from the independents, because they're the ones that definitely put him into office 3 years ago, and the ones who could definitely kick him out. They certainly kicked a lot of his friends out of office last year. So we'll see if the numbers do improve and whether his numbers improve along with it, if they do. Usually they kind of work in tandem. But in terms of Obama's friends in Congress, you may remember during the presidential campaign where he talked about basically his one Republican friend, and that was Indiana Senator Dick Lugar, because they had at least talked together about trying to find some loose nukes in Eastern Europe and throughout the former Soviet republics. I don't remember if they actually got any legislation done. But Dick Lugar has been there a long time. In fact, he's tied with Orrin Hatch as the senior Republican senator. And this is our bad martini today, because Lugar's up in 2012. There's already a rumbling that the Tea Party might challenge him in the primary. And Senator Lugar doing himself no favors, basically telling Tea Partiers to get real over the fact that they opposed the START treaty. And then he had this to say about criticism that he's supported two very liberal Supreme Court nominees in Sotomayor and Kagan.
I hope people sort of understand that, because otherwise we polarize the Supreme Court business to a point that conservative justices offered by a conservative Republican president who will be elected at some point are going to have trouble.
Well, it's a good thing that he's doing that, because clearly the confirmation process over the last 25 years has been working swimmingly without any drip of partisanship.
Yeah, you know, I wonder if Robert Bork could be reached for comment on that, to say nothing of the fairly high number of Democrats who voted against both Roberts and Alito, an effort to filibuster Alito, completely unprecedented. Roberts was replacing Rehnquist. I mean, this was, you know, not a swing vote or one left of center perceived justice was being replaced by a right one. This was a righty for a righty. And the Democrats still wanted to you know, do everything they could to oppose it. So, you know, this golden era of bipartisan reaching across the aisle and kumbaya talk and during confirmation hearings is long gone. And you wonder if, you know, anyone's bothered to tell Dick Lugar this. The other thing which is kind of frustrating or just kind of fascinating about this is just to see. Look, I'm a fairly big tent kind of guy. I tried to make the case for Mike Castle in the run up to the Delaware primary. But you know, you can't wave a red flag in front of a bull and not expect some sort of reaction. I mean, Dick Luger is tugging on Superman's cape, he's spitting into the wind, he's trying to remove the mask from the old Lone Ranger, and he's messing around with Jim. It's one thing to not be on board with every policy idea that comes from the Tea Parties. It's another thing to antagonize them. And the only thing I can think of a certain logic to this, presuming he wants to stick around for another 6 years, and I would note the man is 80. He's getting up there in years, and there are a lot of Hoosiers. Think highly of him, but who feel like it's time for him to move on and some new blood to get in there. When he says stuff like this, I think it just, you know, it probably, you know, angers the heck out of a whole bunch of them. And I'm wondering if the idea is to be so outrageous and so antagonistic to the Tea Party members that all of them decide to run against him, or at the very least, you know, a whole bunch of them. And then the anti-Luger Republican primary vote is split 6 or 7 ways instead of having one clear non-Luger conservative choice.
Well, I think he's probably about to get, for sure, the biggest primary challenge he's had in many, many years. But this is a guy who's coasted through primaries and general elections for a very long time. I've been watching politics for 25, 30 years, and I can't remember him ever being in a nail biter. So this could be a whole new experience for him. And as far as guys who are turning 80 running into this sort of thing, Arlen Specter obviously didn't fare very well as he tried to do what he did with the Democrats in Pennsylvania, and others who have not had to face the music. Could be an interesting primary for Dick Luger, especially in a state that seemed to be very fed up with big government.
It's just one note worth adding, Greg, is that one, Indiana has become the place to be in terms of, you know, a lot of political activity. You've got Mike Pence declining to run for president. A lot of people getting excited about that. Mitch Daniels, very strong possibility. A bunch of very competitive House races last time around and a couple potential rematches. And now this one. So one way or another, Indiana is going to get a heck of a lot of attention. Maybe we should say that we're seeing the specterizing of Dick Luger, because it's worth noting that he's traditionally been a fairly darn conservative guy. Indiana is not really a hospitable place for liberals. But I just think, as you know, over time you spend in Washington, you just become more and more comfortable with the way things are done and the way they have been done in the past, and you lose any instinct for shaking things up a little. And I think that's probably just the heart of this giant gap between the conservative grassroots of Indiana and their incumbent senator.
Let's move on to number 3 now. And this one hits actually a little bit close to home for National Review. And this is the crazy one of the day. Chris Matthews, we could really put him here every day, but we try to find the special nuggets to actually find airtime for this. And this is a National Review's DeRoy Murdoch appearing on Hardball and basically talking about one of the things that actually you talked about on MSNBC as well, whether or not Jeb Bush should run for president. And at the very end here, Murdoch's explaining that he doesn't really want to see Jeb Bush run. And Chris Matthews ends up on a very bizarre non sequitur.
Two Bushes within a few years of each other would be more than enough as far as that goes.
Thank you, Grant DeRoy. You look more like the president than that guy, that Romney guy. Just we have that going for us in this country. Thank anyway, you. Thank you, DeRoy Murdoch.
So there's Chris Matthews. So many different ways you can react to this. And Jim, I'll give you the bulk of the floor on this one. The first thing that hit me was, if a conservative said that, there'd be an absolute outrage. Secondly, the obvious implication here is that since DeRoy Murdoch is black, you should clearly be supporting Obama.
Well, yeah, this is about as, you know, awkward as a thing Matthews has said in easily a day, Greg. and that's the thing, is that, you know, it's one of those things where Chris Matthews is in a circumstance where if you'd said, you know, it's came out really bad, it sounds terrible, but in his defense, he was drinking. You just shrug. You just, oh, okay. All right. That explains it. Scarily, Chris Matthews says most of these things stone cold sober. That's perhaps a little bit more creepy and disturbing. I guess it's simple to say, DeRoy Murdoch, you're black. You know, it's kind of this strange. Hey, was that, I guess, for the closed captioned for folks who weren't looking at the screen? Or perhaps he thought DeRoy Murdoch had forgotten that. He felt the need to remind him of that. Condescending and unnecessary. I'm reminded of Matthews saying, during one previous Obama speech, he said something like, for a while, I forgot that he was black. I mean, Chris Matthews just a magnet to these kinds of awkward statements, and it never really seems to hold any type of real consequence to him. Keith Olbermann departed, so maybe he feels like there's some sort of big shoes of crazy that have to be filled at that network. Typical and depressing. It'd be nice if one of these days, these statements caught up to Chris Matthews. I don't think that'll ever occur. But then again, you know, Don Imus said something really awkward and horrific and one day all of a sudden found intense consequences when, in fact, he'd been saying, you know, similar comments over many years with no serious fallout. So maybe one of these days, one of these statements will catch up with Chris Matthews. But I would not hold my breath.
One of the things you need to get a big backlash from your bosses, though, is viewers in the first place. And if you look at even at MSNBC rating levels, he's the bottom of the barrel when it comes to primetime ratings. So hard to know what the actual reaction will be there, but just absolutely bizarre. But I'm sure we'll have more from him and others to kick around the next few days. Jim, good as always to be with you.
Looking forward to the next time, Greg.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.